called awake, if it's for someone who isn't going to be awake ever again. I was 5 at Uncle Chip's wake, and it was the first time I saw a real-life dead person. Because at the wake, Uncle Chip's casket was in the front of the wake room, and the lid was open. Uncle Chip was lying inside there, and he looked like regular. He had his eyes closed, and it was like he was sleeping. I didn't want to go close to the casket, but the whole time we were in the wake room, which was a long time because there were 2 wakes, on 2 days in a row, I kept looking at Uncle Chip. I thought maybe he wasn't really dead, or maybe he was making a joke, because Uncle Chip always used to make jokes, and I thought maybe he was waiting for the perfect moment to sit up in the casket and scare us. A lot of people went to his casket and sat in front of it on their knees and touched his hands, which were folded on his chest. And I wondered if he died with his hands like that. And I wondered what his hands felt like, and if they were cold or what. That would have been the perfect time to sit up, and it would have scared the poop out of the people sitting in front of the casket. But Uncle Chip never sat up, and he never moved. And at the funeral at the church, the lid of the casket was closed. After breakfast, Daddy helped me put on my black suit. Well, it wasn't my suit. It was Andy's, the one he had on at Uncle Chip's wake and funeral. I thought it was kind of funny I was going to wear Andy's wake suit at Andy's wake. Not funny like you want to laugh, but strange funny. When Uncle Chip died, Mommy took me and Andy to the mall to buy us suits because we didn't have any. And you have to wear a suit when somebody dies. And it has to be black, because when you wear something black, it shows you're sad. So black also is a color for sad. But I picked gray for sad on my feelings pages, and black for scared. The black suit matched my scared feeling about going to the wake. Andy made a fuss when we went shopping for a suit, because he didn't want to wear one. But I liked it. I looked like Daddy when he goes to work. First I tried on my suit from when Uncle Chip died, but it was too small and I couldn't even button my pants. So Daddy got Andy's suit from his closet, and I got worried that he would see my hideout, but then it didn't look like he did because he didn't say anything about it when he came back with Andy's suit. He held up the jacket and I put it on. You couldn't see my hands because the sleeves were too long. "Daddy, the sleeves are annoying me," I said, because my hands kept getting stuck in the sleeves, and I had to put my arms all the way in the air to get them out. Andy's a lot taller than me because he's 3.5 years older, and also he's really tall for his age. I'm not. I'm regular tall. "Sorry, bud, it's going to have to do," Daddy said. And that was a surprise, because Daddy always wants us to be dressed nice. "We're not going out looking like hobos." That's what he says to us, and he makes us go change and put on more handsome clothes. I didn't know why we couldn't go to the mall and buy a new suit for me. The long sleeves were really bothering me, and my stomach was starting to bother me too. "Can you roll up the sleeves?" My voice sounded whiny. I move side to side a lot because of my stomach. "You don't roll up the sleeves of a suit. Just leave it. It's really not important, okay? Can you hold still for 1 second so I can put the tie on?" Daddy said in a mean voice. And then I could tell he felt bad about talking like that because he said, "You look handsome, buddy." And he put his hand through my hair. "Listen, today is going to be hard for all of us. Understand?" I shook my head yes. "I need you to do me a favor and be a big boy today. And help me with Mommy, all right? I need your help today." I shook my head yes again, even though I wasn't sure I was going to be a good helper today, because of how I was feeling. We drove to the wake in Mommy's car. It didn't get towed at the hospital. Grandma and Aunt Mary went to pick it up the day after Mommy parked it on the sidewalk. Mommy didn't drive, though. She sat in the passenger seat and stared out the window. Although it wasn't even possible to see anything with all the rain splashing against the windows, and also the windows were getting fog on them from our breathing. Mimi sat next to me in the back, and also stared out of the window. Daddy was driving really slow, and the more we got away from the house, the slower he was driving, even though there was no traffic. It was really quiet in the car with no radio on. All I could hear was the rain on the sunroof and the squeaky whish, whish, from the windshield wipers going at dizzy speed. I liked that it was quiet. At the wake, there would be a lot of people and a lot of talking, and I wished we could keep driving. Just us. "Mommy," I said into the quiet car, and it sounded too loud. Mommy's shoulders went up a little, but she didn't turn around, and she didn't give me an answer. "Mommy?"
"What, bud?"
Daddy said. "Do we have to go to the wake?" I asked, and I knew it was a stupid question. Miss Russell always says there are no stupid questions, but that's not really true, because when you already know what the answer is going to be, it's kind of stupid to ask the question anyway. Mimi grabbed my hand and gave me a sad smile. "Yes, Zach, we have to go to the wake," Daddy said. "We are Andy's family, and people are coming to say goodbye to him and express their condolences to us." I started to think about Uncle Chip's wake again, and it made my stomach go into overdrive. I tried to open the window to get some fresh air, but my window was locked. Daddy always locks the windows from the front so we can't open them in the back, even though I get car sick a lot and it helps when the windows are open. But Daddy says it hurts his ears, so it's a no to opening the windows. I mostly only get car sick when Daddy drives, and never when Mommy drives. I didn't want to see Andy dead in a casket. When we got to the place of the wake and Daddy parked the car, my heart was beating really fast. I felt like I had to throw up, and tears were coming in my eyes. I squeezed my nose so hard it hurt. "Get out of the car, Zach. Come on," Daddy said. I wanted to stay in the car, but Daddy went around and opened my door. I saw Mommy standing next to the car, getting wet from the rain, and she looked really small and scared, too. She held out her hand, and her face gave me a look like she wanted me to go to her. And so I got out of the car and took her hand, and we started walking together. Inside were some men in suits, and they talked with quiet voices to Mommy and Daddy and Mimi. And no one else was there except us. I looked around, and it looked like the place where Uncle Chip's wake was, in New Jersey. It looked like a lobby in a fancy hotel, the one we go to sometimes when we stay overnight in the city. It had big comfy chairs with little tables in between, and a big sparkly lamp hanging from the ceiling, and a red carpet that was very soft under my shoes. Quiet piano music was playing from somewhere in the room. The lobby room felt cozy. I wanted to go sit in one of the comfy chairs, but then Daddy told me it was time to go into the wake room, and bam! My stomach went right back to roller coaster mode. Mommy was holding my hand. She squeezed it tighter and tighter, and it got too tight. But I didn't try to pull my hand away. Mommy needed to squeeze it, I thought. Daddy had his hands on Mommy's back and on the top of my head, and he started to push us toward a door across the lobby room, and that was probably going to be the wake room behind it. Mimi walked behind us, and we all took tiny steps. We got closer to the door, and I held my breath in and looked at my feet. Every time I took a step, my shoe sank into the soft red carpet. I looked behind me to see if I was leaving footprints. I was, but then the carpet went right back to normal after I picked my feet up. I kept my eyes on my feet the whole time, and it felt like behind the door something scary was waiting. Something really big and scary. And the door should definitely stay closed. 20. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. Somebody opened the door. The carpet changed from red to blue. The room was quiet and it smelled good, like a garden. Mommy made a sound like a lot of fast breaths. She let go of my hand and walked away from me, but I didn't know where because I still didn't look up. My eyes were stuck on my feet on the blue carpet. Without Mommy holding my hand tight, I felt like I was in a strange place, all by myself, and I got lost or something. I stayed by the door, and because I didn't want to use my eyes, I tried to use my other senses to figure out what it was like around me. I used my touch sense, and my fingers touched the wall, and it had patterns on it that were smooth, and I felt my feet touch the blue carpet that was soft like the red carpet in the lobby room. I couldn't use my taste sense because there was nothing in my mouth, but I had a bad feeling in my mouth from when I started to feel sick in the car. I used my smell sense, and it really did smell like a garden, like flowers, and it smelled really sweet. I liked that at first, but then it smelled too sweet or something. For my hearing sense, I thought maybe there would be bird or bee sounds, because you can hear those in a garden. But it was completely quiet. Even with the hearing super sense, all I could hear was quietness. But then came a crying sound that was quiet at first, and it sounded far away from me, but then it got louder, and it came from Mommy somewhere in the room. Mommy's crying got louder, and it went on for a long time, and I thought that maybe I should go find her, but I didn't move from my spot by the door, because I started to get to know this spot, and I didn't want to get to know anything else in the room. All of a sudden, I heard a loud crash, and it made me look up from my feet. Right away, I saw everything I didn't want to see. The casket, right in the front of the room, in the middle. It was a different color than Uncle Chip's. This one was light brown, and Uncle Chip's was black. And this one was smaller. The lid was closed, not open like Uncle Chip's, and lots of flowers were on top of the lid. I started to feel all hot under the suit. Andy was inside of there. His body. Daddy and Mimi were in front of the casket, and they were pulling Mommy up. She was on the floor next to a big vase with purple flowers that was fallen over. Between my spot by the door and Andy's casket in the front were a lot of chairs all in a row with a walkway in between them, almost like how the benches were in the church after the gunman came. There were flowers along the walls and next to the casket. They were pretty and in lots of colors, and now I knew why it smelled like a garden in here. I saw pictures everywhere, too, mostly of Andy and some of all our family, and the pictures were on boards, and some in picture frames on skinny tables. I heard sounds behind me, and people started to come in the wake room. Grandma and Aunt Mary, my cousin Jonas who pees in the bed, and his mom and dad, and some other people from our family. Mommy and Daddy and Mimi stood in the front. Mommy was holding onto Daddy's arm, and she looked like she was going to fall down again. She stared straight in front of her and didn't make any crying sounds anymore. Tears were running down her face and dripping on her black dress, but she didn't wipe them off, just let them drip, drip, drip. More and more people came in, and everyone talked in quiet voices like whispering. Like maybe they were afraid to wake Andy up in his casket. All the whispering together sounded loud in my ears. "Let's go and stand with your mom and dad in the front," Grandma said. She pushed me with her hand, and her fingernails were digging in my back a little. We all made a line in the front, very close to the casket. Me, Mommy, Daddy, Grandma and Mimi, and Aunt Mary. I didn't want to be there. So close. All the other people came in the front to talk to us. The sleeves of my suit started to bother me again, and my right hand got stuck every time I tried to put it up to do handshakes. At the top of the shirt by my throat where Daddy made a knot with the tie, it felt tight. I swallowed a lot of times, and every time I could feel the swallowing get stuck on my tie knot. More people came and said, "My condolences." More hugs. More handshakes with my hand getting stuck in the sleeve. My stomach did a growl like I was hungry, but I didn't feel hungry. I tried to pull on the tie knot with my fingers to make it not so tight. It didn't move, and now it started to feel hard to breathe. I got hot all over, and no air was going in when I tried to breathe, and my stomach started to feel worse. I left our line in the front, and I walked to the lobby room. I wanted to run because I felt like poop was going to come, but I didn't run. There were too many people, and they were all looking at me, and the red juice spill was starting to happen. When I got to the lobby room, I spotted the bathroom sign, and it was all the way on the other end of the room. I tried to get there fast, and I was sweating a lot and breathing a lot, but no air was coming in. I finally got in the bathroom. I could feel the poop coming, and I tried to open the pants from my suit. But it had a slidey button that was stuck, and I couldn't get it open. The poop came. It came and came, and I could feel it hot in my underwear. I think it was diarrhea, because I could also feel something hot on my left leg running down all the way to my sock. I tried to stand very still, because everything felt wet and sticky, and I didn't want to feel it. The smell was making me feel sick. It smelled really bad. I didn't know what to do. I was stuck in the bathroom with poop all in my pants, and outside the bathroom were all those people, and everyone was going to know. There was a sign on the toilet paper thing. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. I read it over and over again. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. I traced the words with my finger. Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. It helped me calm down a little bit to read it a lot of times. I knew which word was coming next, and when I was done, I started all over again. I stood in the toilet stall for a long time, and nothing changed. It smelled worse, so I had to do something about it, except I didn't know what, and we didn't bring any extra pants. No one came in, and I didn't hear any voices from outside, so I tried to take my pants off again, and this time the button opened right away. That was really unfair that it opened now, but not earlier when the poop was coming. I slowly pulled the pants down. The smell got worse, and I felt like I had to dry heave. Dry heaving is when you feel like you have to throw up and your mouth moves like you're throwing up, but nothing comes out. When I get carsick when Daddy is driving, and I throw up in a bag that Mommy holds for me, right away Daddy and Andy start dry heaving, and they act all dramatic. Then Daddy opens all the windows, and he should have opened them before I got carsick. I dry heaved and took off my shoes and socks. And there really was poop in my left sock, and all the way down on my left leg. I took my pants and underwear all the way off, and poop fell out and landed on the floor. It was so gross, I started to cry. All this time I didn't cry. When the gunman came, and I had to hide in the closet with my class, I didn't cry. When Daddy told me Andy was dead, and Mommy acted crazy at the hospital, and we had to leave her there, I didn't cry. And all the times after that, when tears were coming in my eyes, I never cried. But now I did. And now it was like all the tears that didn't come out before all came out together. And it was a lot. I didn't try to do the squeeze-away trick. I didn't even want to. I just let the tears come out, out, out. And it felt good. I tried to get some toilet paper and wipe the poop off the floor, but I made it get spread all around. I tried to clean off my leg and butt, and I used a lot of toilet paper from the Jumbo Twin Roll Tissue Dispenser. I cried and I wiped, and I ripped off more toilet paper, and then I tried to flush, but it didn't go down, probably from too much paper. Then the door opened, and a man walked in that I didn't know, and he saw me without my pants on because I never closed the door from my stall. So he saw me right away. He covered his mouth with his hand and went right back outside. I locked the door to the stall. A little while later, someone came in again, and I heard Daddy's voice. "Zach? Jesus Christ, oh my God, what's going on in here?" I didn't answer him because I didn't want him to know. "Open the door, Zach!" So I opened the door, and Daddy saw my whole mess. And he pulled his suit jacket over his nose, and I could tell he was trying really hard not to dry heave. I was supposed to be a big boy today, and now it was the exact opposite. I was being a baby. Mommy came in the bathroom, too, even though it was a bathroom for boys, and girls are not supposed to go in the boys' room. She could get into trouble for that. When she saw me, she made a loud, "Oh!" sound, and she pushed Daddy out of the way and hugged me tight. She didn't even care that poop probably got on her dress. She hugged me tight and rocked me and cried and cried. And I cried and cried, and my head was starting to hurt from all the crying. Daddy stood there with his suit jacket over his nose and just stared at us. 21. Battle Cry. Fine, whatever, you can stay if you're not annoying. Andy called to me from the top of the rock, and I started to climb up to him before he changed his mind. The rock was very high, and the side was smooth, and I kept sliding down.
Take your Crocs off, then it's easier, Liza said.
She was climbing up behind me. I kicked off my Crocs, and they bounced down the rock and halfway down Liza's yard. There was like a small hill down to her house. Liza put her hand on my back and pushed me up. From up here, I could see right into Liza's bedroom. That's how high the hill and the rock are in her backyard. The rock was hot under my feet, and it hurt a little, but I got used to it. The air was very hot, too, and the back of my t-shirt was wet from sweat. It was like you could see the hotness in the air coming off the rock. It looked blurry, and the sun made little crystals in the rock very sparkly. I could hear the hotness, too. It was making a zzzz sound. Crickets were all around us. I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. Zeep, zeep, zeep. All singing together, but starting and stopping at different times. First, Andy said I wasn't allowed to play with him and Liza and the others, but then he said okay. Maybe because Aiden was there, too, and he was six, like me. He's James and June's cousin, and their mom said they had to play with him. And probably because of Liza. She is nice to me, and when she's there, Andy acts nicer, too. That's probably because Andy has a crush on Liza, and wants her to have a crush on him. When she asks him to stop doing something, like calling me a loser or telling me to get lost, he does it, and he doesn't get his bad temper.
You can be on the tribe, Andy said to me when I sat down on the rock next to him.
I watched him make a bow out of a stick with the pocket knife. It was Daddy's pocket knife, and Mommy didn't want Andy to use it because it's too dangerous, and he could get hurt from it. But Daddy said, I've had this knife since I was younger than Zack, for God's sake. Let the boy do regular boy things. Always being so overprotective, right? And he slapped Aiden's dad on the back. And then Mommy didn't say anything else about it. The game we were playing was Indian Tribe. Andy was the chief, and he was sitting in the middle of the rock, crisscross applesauce, like how Indian chiefs sit. Around his head was a blue headband with different colored feathers glued on it. The headband pushed his hair up on the side so it looked messy. It's important that all the little branches get cut off on the sides, and the stick is really smooth, see? Andy said to me. I knew we were pretending, but it felt real, and I had an excited feeling in my belly. Can I try? I asked. No, you can't use the knife. It's way too dangerous for you. That's only for me, Andy said. I could feel the rock making my butt hot through my shorts. It's a good lookout up here, Aiden said. Yeah, and the wall behind us is good protection for our camp, Andy said. Liza pointed at the left and right side of her house. That way, enemies can only come from there and there, and we can see them coming. On the right side of her house was their patio, where Mommy and Daddy were hanging out with Liza's parents and the other grown-ups for the barbecue. We still need a name for our tribe, James said. He was working on making a long spear for hunting. Maybe Lost Boys, like in Peter Pan when they start to be friends with the Indians, I said. Well, Lost Boys and Girls, I said because of Liza and June.
Okay, that's dumb, Andy said.
We'll use the names of all the tribe members, or maybe the first two letters of all the names. For a while, we tried out how we could put the first two letters of everyone's names together. In the end, we decided on Jaisa Julayane. It sounded Indian, and we practiced saying it fast. Jaisa Julayane, Jaisa Julayane, Jaisa Julayane. That's also going to be our battle cry, for when we go into battle with enemy tribes, Andy told us. And he hollered, Jaisa Julayane! Jaisa Julayane! It came back to us like a little echo from Liza's house. All our supplies were spread out on the rock. Sticks and different colored strings for making bows and arrows and spears, and feathers and beads. We also had two little bags with arrowheads inside. They were mine and Andy's,
and we got them when we went to a park with camp a couple weeks ago and we did mining. Mining is when you get a big bag, and it looks like only sand is in it. You get a board that has a net in the middle with little holes, and then you go to the river. When you put the board with the net in the water and pour the sand in, all the sand gets washed away through the holes, and then you see fancy rocks that were hiding in the sand, and arrowheads if you got lucky. They were real arrowheads that the Indians made out of black shiny rocks, and they were very sharp on the sides and pointy at the top. Me and Andy both brought a whole bag home from mining, full of rocks and arrowheads. The strings and feathers were from Liza and June. They had them at home in their art supplies. They kept remembering other supplies we could use for decorating the arrows and spears, and ran off to get them. "Zach, we need more perfect sticks for bows. Go look in our yard, too," Andy said, and I did. The sticks for the bows had to be long and thin, so you could bend them. Andy did a cut at the ends of the sticks, and we tied string on both ends. You had to tie it to one end first, and then pull that end down with the string and tie it to the other end so it looked like a big D. The sticks for arrows had to be shorter and not so thin, and Andy did a cut on only one end. He made an X with two cuts so we could put feathers on that end, and then we tied the arrowheads to the other end with string. Spears were longer and thicker sticks. We didn't have enough arrowheads for those, and they weren't big enough anyway for spears, so we made fake arrowheads out of cardboard. We worked on our weapons for a long time, and we talked about what the battles with the enemies were going to be like. We worked like a real tribe team. There was no fighting, and I never played with Andy like this before. We laughed because our feet were really dirty and black, but that's how you know you're real Indians, Andy said. We had mosquito bites all over us, especially me because mosquitoes love me, but we didn't care. Finally, when all the weapons were done, it was time to go into battle. We split up into two teams. I thought we were all going to be in the same tribe, but Andy said he changed his mind about it, and it wouldn't be so much fun to go into battle against an invisible enemy. So he changed it to two teams, and they were going to be enemy tribes. I wanted to be with Andy, but he picked Aiden first, not me, and he didn't want 2 6-year-olds on his team. So now we were going to be enemies again. Andy's tribe disappeared around the left side of Liza's house, and I saw Andy, the chief, run ahead, and June and Aiden follow him. Me and James and Liza spread out in the bushes to be on the lookout for them. We carried our bows and arrows and spears, and we ran behind the bushes and trees for cover from Liza's backyard, around her house, across the street into our backyard, and into the yards of our other neighbors. "Can you see them?" Liza whispered, and her voice sounded like she was scared. So then I started to get a scared feeling in my stomach. My heart was beating fast. It was like we were hunting for a real enemy. But then I thought about when Andy disappeared in the darkness. He didn't look scared. He looked brave. I decided that I was going to do that too. Be brave. "Take cover," I said with a loud whispering voice, and I ducked behind a tree. James and Liza ducked behind the tree next to me. "Don't make a sound," I said. My breath was going in and out fast, and I tried to make it go slower. Then I heard a loud, "Chase Juliane!" coming from somewhere in front of us, and I couldn't see where it was coming from, but I jumped out from behind the tree, and I yelled, "Attack!" It was like I was a real Indian who was brave and going into battle. I heard another loud, "Chase Juliane!" that sounded like Andy's voice coming from somewhere in front of us. All of a sudden, James was next to me, and he threw his spear in the direction from where Andy's battle cry was coming. I got my bow and arrow ready. "Chase Juliane!" I heard again, and it sounded closer this time. I fired an arrow and it disappeared into the darkness. A second later, I heard a loud scream. "Ah! You guys, stop! Andy got hurt!" I heard June call. I ran to where her voice came from, and then I saw Andy. He was lying on the road between our yard and Liza's house. My arrow was sticking out of his chest. He didn't move. His eyes were closed, and in the light from the street lamp I saw the blood. There was blood on his t-shirt, and there was a puddle of blood around him on the road that was getting bigger and bigger, like all the blood from his whole body was running out of him onto the road. I sat down next to Andy on the road and started screaming. Andy! Andy! Wake up, Andy! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Andy! Mommy! 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 I screamed and screamed, and then someone touched my shoulders from behind and started shaking me. I kept screaming and screaming, and someone kept shaking me and shaking me. Zach! Zach! You have to wake up, Zach! You have to wake up! I saw Daddy in the darkness, and he was the one who was shaking me. Daddy, I shot Andy with my arrow, Daddy! I think I killed Andy! I think he's dead! I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that! We were playing, it was just pretend! What? No, you were dreaming, you had a bad dream again. Look, Daddy said, and he put his hand up and pushed something to the side. Then it wasn't so dark anymore, and I could see we weren't on the road behind our yard. We were in my hideout. I was blinking my eyes because of the light that was coming in the hideout now, and because of the tears, and I didn't know why I was in here all of a sudden, and why Daddy was in here with me. But it happened. It really happened. I saw him with all the blood from my arrow. I killed him. No, buddy, that didn't happen. You didn't kill Andy. My God, did you scare me just now? Daddy said. Come here. He pulled me out of the closet and we sat on Andy's rug. Me on Daddy's lap. I put my head on his chest and I could hear his heart pounding loud. I heard you scream, but I didn't know where you were. I looked everywhere for you, but I couldn't figure out where the screaming was coming from. It took me forever to find you in there. What are you even doing in Andy's closet, bud? Daddy petted my back when he was talking. I started to calm down a little and the pounding in Daddy's chest got quieter, too. I guess I was sleeping, maybe, I said. But why in Andy's closet? It's my hideout now, I said. And Daddy answered, I see. I was dreaming about when we played Indians on Liza's rock at the barbecue, I told Daddy, and it still felt like it happened like a minute ago. That was a great time you guys had, I remember that. It was like an actual adventure, I said. Sure was. But I didn't kill Andy. No, you didn't. But he's dead, I said, and it sounded like a question. Yes, buddy, he's dead. 22. Goodbye. When you die, and it's time for your funeral, that's when people say goodbye to you. At the wake, you're kind of still with your family and friends, and they can look at you in the casket if the lid is open, or at least in the pictures that get hung up everywhere. But at the funeral, everyone says goodbye, and it's forever. Final goodbyes, that's what Mommy called it when it was time for Uncle Chip's funeral. People start to forget about you after you die, and they can't see you all the time anymore. It was already happening with Andy. I started to notice that at his funeral, that was on the day after the wake. Everyone was talking about Andy, but they talked about him like they only remembered some parts of him, not all the parts. Oh, Andy was just such a darling, such a pleasure to have in class. He was hilarious, wasn't he? What a character! He was so bright, incredibly smart. It was like they weren't really talking about Andy, or they were starting to forget about what he was like. At the funeral, I sat in between Mommy and Daddy on the first bench in the front of the church. It wasn't the church by McKinley, or the one where we went to Uncle Chip's funeral, but a different one we never went to before. Inside, it didn't really look like a church, more like a really big room with a lot of benches. It was freezing cold in the room. There was an altar table in the front, too, and Andy's casket was in front of it with flowers on top. There wasn't a Jesus hanging from a cross. Only a cross and no Jesus. So that was good. I didn't want to sit there again and look at Jesus with the nails in his hands and feet, like when I was at the church by McKinley. The whole big room was full of people, and a lot of them couldn't even sit down and were standing in the back. I turned around and I saw a lot of the people from the wake yesterday. I didn't stay there for the whole time. I had to go home with Aunt Mary because of the poop. At the funeral, it was our family and friends, our neighbors, and parents and kids from school, and the cross, and Daddy's work, and a lot of people I didn't know, too. When I was just about to turn back around, I spotted Miss Russell on a bench in the back of the church, and she still looked very white with a lot of black around her eyes. When she saw me looking at her, she did a little smile, and then she lifted up her arm. At first I thought she was waving at me, but then I realized she was shaking her charm bracelet. It made me think of the charm she gave me, and I thought about it laying in the corner of my hideout, and now I wished I brought it here with me. I smiled back at Miss Russell and turned back around. I didn't like sitting all the way in the front. I could feel everyone's eyes on me from behind. Mommy had her arm around me, and she was holding me very tight. Her fingers were grabbing my arm, and the grabbing made her fingers look white. The sadness I could feel coming off her made my chest feel tight, and it was like the other people coming in the church room brought more sadness with them, and the room was too full with people and their sadness, and it squeezed my chest tighter and tighter until I could only take small, fast breaths. Andy's casket was right in front of where we were sitting. I wondered if Andy up in heaven, or wherever his soul went, knew that right now was his funeral and people were saying their final goodbyes to him. And then his body in the casket was going in a grave in the graveyard. Could he see us sitting on the bench in this freezing cold room? And could he feel the people's sadness? First the man from the church, who was wearing like a black dress or something, and had a cross necklace on, said a speech on a microphone. And it was long. And I didn't understand everything he said, but some of it was about God. And he said things about Andy, and I didn't know how he knew all those things about him, because we never saw him before. He also sang songs in between his speech that I didn't know, and the people in the room sang the songs with him, except for Mommy and Daddy. They were very still and quiet. All three of us were sitting very close together, legs and arms touching. After the man from the church was done with his speech and songs, Daddy got up. He walked to the microphone very slow, and I guessed he was going to say a speech, too. And I didn't know he was going to do that. My left side where Daddy was sitting close got cold. Everyone was staring at Daddy, only Mommy wasn't. She was looking down at a tissue she was holding in her lap, and she was squeezing it with one hand and squeezing my arm with the other hand. It was very quiet in the church room, and Daddy didn't say anything for a long time. I started to think he was just going to stand there, and then people were going to get bored. But then he made a coughing sound in his throat like he had to make room for his words. Daddy took out a piece of paper from the pocket of his suit jacket and started to read what it said on it. "I want to thank everyone for coming today and helping us say goodbye to our son Andy." The paper in his hands was shaking so much I didn't know how he was even reading it. His voice was shaking too, like the paper. He made a long break, and maybe he was only saying thank you. But then he said more, the words coming out slowly and quietly. "A week ago, my son's life was cut short in the most horrific way I can imagine. Break. Never in a million years do you think something like this could ever happen to you. Your family. Your child. And yet here we are. It's hard to believe this is our reality now, and we are supposed to continue on living our lives somehow. Without him." Daddy put the piece of paper down and made the sound again in his throat a few times. I'm sorry. I'll keep this short. There is now a big gaping hole in our lives, where a week ago there was our smart, funny, outgoing boy with his big personality. Andy always made us laugh, and he made us so proud every day. He was an amazing son and loving brother, the best we could have ever asked for. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around how to keep on living like this, without him, with that huge hole in our lives where my son is supposed to be. He was taken from us, and I don't know how anything will ever make sense again without him. Daddy looked down at the piece of paper like he was trying to find the spot where he stopped reading earlier. I could see his chin was shaking. He kept looking at the paper and said, "I want to ask all of you to please keep Andy and the memories you have of him close, and carry him with you always." Mommy started shaking next to me, She let go of my arm and crossed her arms in front of her belly and leaned forward, so her head almost touched her legs, and her shoulders went up and down from crying. All around us people cried, and the sadness was like a big heavy blanket all around us and on top of us. I thought about Daddy's speech, and I watched Mommy and everyone else cry, and it all didn't feel like real life, because Daddy did it too. He didn't talk about Andy like how he actually was, and so it was like everyone was crying and being sad, but not about the actual Andy, just a version of him that wasn't the right one. It was like no one was saying goodbye properly to him. I felt like I wanted to stand up and yell at everyone to stop lying about my brother. The sadness blanket didn't go away even after we left the church room, and it got more heavy when we went to the cemetery. We stood around Andy's grave with our shoes in the mud, and we got wet from the rain. I tried not to look at the deep, dark hole in the ground that Andy's casket was going into, and I tried to keep my eyes on the big tree that was right next to his grave. It was full of yellow and orange leaves that were shiny from the rain. It looked like the whole tree was on fire. I thought it was the most beautiful tree I ever saw, and I was happy that it was going to be right there next to Andy's grave. After Andy's casket went in the hole, it was like the sadness blanket got too heavy for Mommy, and she couldn't stand up anymore with it on top of her. Daddy and Mimi had to hold her up from the sides and put her in the car, and it stayed heavy on my shoulders too, all the way home, and it made it hard for me to get up the stairs. I could only be upstairs for a little while, Grandma said, because people were coming over, and that was not good because all I wanted to do was be in my hideout. I sat crisscross applesauce on Andy's sleeping bag. I didn't move and didn't say anything. I just waited. I waited for the sadness blanket to come off my shoulders and for my chest to stop feeling so tight. I wanted to see if it was going to feel different now, if the funeral made it so that Andy would feel more gone than before. I wondered again if Andy could see us from somewhere, at his own funeral, and if he also noticed that people were talking about him like he was a different person. Even Daddy didn't say the real truth about him. Andy probably thought it was funny, and now all the bad stuff he did didn't matter anymore. But I thought that if it was me, I would be afraid that if people didn't remember me right, my actual self, then it would be like I was really gone from Earth forever. "Andy," I said in a quiet voice, "it's me, Zach." I waited like he was going to answer me back, but of course that wasn't going to happen. I was hoping that maybe I would know if he could hear me. "I'm in your closet. It's my hideout now. It's a secret. No one knows I'm in here. Well, Daddy knows now." I was telling him things that if he was seeing me right now, he would know already. But I said them anyway. "I bet you're mad I'm in your room and you can't do anything about it. You would try to kill me if you were here right now and not dead." I thought that that was mean to say to a person who's dead, but it was saying the truth. Saying the truth to Andy felt good. "Anyway, you were really a jerk to me all the time." "Jerk. That's a bad word. But Andy said it a lot, so now I was going to say it, too. I heard someone calling my name from downstairs, so I got up fast. Before I left the hideout, I turned around and said, 'I'm still mad at you about that.'"
23. Death Stare.
I heard he had problems for a long time and the family didn't know how to deal with him. Mrs. Gray, our neighbor, and Miss Carolyn, that's Mrs. Gray's daughter, were standing by the sink washing dishes. Mrs. Gray handed a wet plate to Miss Carolyn, and she took it to dry it off and put it away in our kitchen cabinet. From the back they looked exactly the same. Same body, same way of moving around, same long hair with curls. You could only tell Mrs. Gray is the mom because her curls are gray, and Miss Carolyn's are brown.
"Yeah, he never graduated, so he's just been sitting in his parents' basement for the last couple years doing who knows what on the computer. How could they have not known how sick he was?"
Miss Carolyn took another plate from Mrs. Gray, and they both shook their long brown and gray curls no.
"Right?" Mrs. Gray said. "It's bizarre. I mean, this is Charlie we're talking about, and Mary. They're such nice people. Charlie's so great with kids. But his own son. What a horrible thing to happen to a parent. Yes, but Ma, he shouldn't have had access to guns. In his mental state? They didn't know he had all those guns in the house? I watched Mrs. Gray and Miss Carolyn clean the dishes, and I listened to them talk about Charlie and his son, the gunman. And they didn't know I could hear them from where I was sitting on the yellow chair in the family room. The yellow chair was starting to be like my spy chair. People never realized I was sitting there, and I could hear everything that was going on in the kitchen and in the family room. After the funeral, a lot of people came to our house, and they were staying for a long time. There was a lot of whispering and crying everywhere. I sat on the spy chair because I didn't want to talk to anyone, and Daddy said I wasn't allowed to go back upstairs. He bought guns on the internet, too. Where the hell did he come up with the money for that? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Mrs. Gray said. I can't get over the message he posted on Facebook. It gives me goosebumps every time I think about it. Miss Carolyn said, I heard that Mary found out about the message and tried to reach Charlie, but it was too late, obviously. I thought about how it was when Charlie let his son come in the school that day. He has a little TV by his desk, and when someone rings the bell at the front door, he can see who it is on the TV because there's a camera outside. So probably his son rang the bell and Charlie thought, oh, my son is coming to visit me, and he let him in. And so it was like it was his fault, too, what happened next. Let me check if anyone else is done with their plate, Miss Carolyn said, and she turned around to come in the family room. I didn't want her to notice me in the spy chair, so I got up fast. And right then I heard the doorbell. I went to open the door, and my belly did a super big flip, because standing right there on our porch was Charlie, and next to him his wife. And just a minute ago, Mrs. Gray and Miss Carolyn were talking about them. In all of kindergarten and on all the days I was in first grade so far, I saw Charlie every day and he always looked the same. Same glasses, same McKinley shirt with his Charlie Rinala's name tag on it, and same face with the big smile. Charlie always talks a little bit loud and jokes around, and right when you start kindergarten he learns all the names, and that's a lot of names to remember. Every time I walk past his desk by the front door, he yells out, Hey, Zach, my best buddy! How you doing today? He calls the other kids Buddy and Princess, but not my best buddy. That was only for me. This Charlie, standing in front of my house now, wasn't the same jokey Charlie. Everything about him was changed. He looked really old, and I could see all the bones in his face, and his smile was gone. His wife stood next to him, still holding an umbrella over their heads, even though they were under the roof from the porch and no rain was coming down on them. For a long time I stared at Charlie and he stared at me. I didn't know if I should say hi to him or what, because his son killed Andy and maybe it was Charlie's fault too, because he let him in the school. After a while his wife said, Sweetheart, are your parents available? And right then, Grandma came up behind me and she put her hand on my shoulder and pushed me out on the porch. With the other hand, she pulled the door almost all the way closed behind us. What in God's name? How dare you? Grandma started her sentences and didn't finish them, and her hand was holding my shoulder hard. Charlie and his wife looked like they were scared of Grandma, and they both went back a few steps on the porch. But they didn't leave. Then Charlie talked, but in a voice that didn't sound like his own voice. It was low and very quiet. Ma'am, we are sorry to intrude. You are sorry to intrude? Grandma's voice went up and Charlie's voice went down. Yes, very sorry. We came to express our condolences to Melissa and... Oh, you came to express your condolences. I was starting to feel annoyed at Grandma. All she was doing was copying Charlie, and that's not a polite way of talking. Charlie's wife was holding on to Charlie's arm and trying to get him to leave, and I saw tears on her face. Behind us, the door opened again, and this time Mommy and Daddy stepped out on the porch. And Grandma moved over to the side away from the door to make room for them. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see she was giving Charlie and his wife a death stare. A death stare is when you look at someone like you want to kill them. Like your eyes are weapons. Like invisible lasers or something. I know what a death stare looks like, because that's what Mommy called it when Andy used to look at her like that a lot of times. When Andy had his bad temper and all the fighting and yelling was over, but Andy was still mad, he sometimes gave Mommy that stare. "Wow, if looks could kill," Mommy said then, and tried to make a joke out of it. I was standing on the porch in between Mommy and Daddy and Charlie and his wife, and I could feel Mommy and Daddy close behind me. I got a feeling in my stomach like something bad was going to happen. There were tears on Charlie's face, and he let them run down. He was looking at something over my head. Mommy, maybe. Mommy used to be Charlie's favorite student when she went to McKinley. Mommy told me that one time, when there was a father-daughter sack race at her field day, when she was in fifth grade, Charlie did it with her. Mommy's dad died when she was in third grade. He had a car accident, and so Mommy had no one to do the sack race with. Except then Charlie did it. And Mommy was really happy about it. Now when Mommy comes to school for something, Charlie always says to me, "Don't tell anyone, but your mother was always my favorite when she went here. And you were like a mini version of her." He always says that, and he gives Mommy a wink. Charlie lifted up his hands and took a step forward. And then he was really close to me, and it looked like he was trying to give Mommy behind me a hug. "Oh, Melissa." It sounded like Charlie had to press out Mommy's name, and then right behind her name was like a volcano of sadness that started erupting, because Charlie started crying, and not just in his face, but with his whole body. I've never seen anyone cry like that before. It looked like it was hard for him to keep standing up. And his whole body was shaking, and he cried really loud. It sounded like it came from somewhere all the way down inside of him. His hands dropped back down to his sides, and his wife grabbed his arm again. For a long time, everyone stood there and watched Charlie's whole body cry, and no one did anything about it. I could feel Charlie's body shaking in front of me, and my throat hurt a lot. I wanted to take a step forward and hug Charlie's body and make it stop shaking. When I was about to do that, Charlie's wife started to say something. "We are sorry to intrude like this." That's what Charlie said earlier. I heard Grandma make a sound like a snort, but she didn't interrupt or copy the words this time. We wanted to come and see you in person to... We are so very sorry." And then it was like she forgot what she wanted to say and she was quiet again. "Sorry?" That was Mommy's voice behind me, and she said it very quiet. The way she said it made the back of my neck feel like it was getting goosebumps, and the bad feeling in my stomach was right. "You're sorry? And you wanted to come here? To our house? Our home? To tell us that?" Mommy's voice was still very quiet, but her words were like they were pointy. She was shooting them out like flying icicles, and Charlie and his wife flinched like real icicles were hitting them. "Your psycho son killed my Andy. My baby. And you wanted to come here and tell us you're sorry?" Mommy was talking louder now, and then she started shouting. I could feel more people coming in the hallway behind us. I turned around to see who it was and to look at Mommy. Daddy grabbed Mommy's arm. "Melissa, let's not..." "No, Jim, let's. Let's absolutely," Mommy said, and she pulled her arm away. I heard Grandma say, "Good heavens." Mommy walked around me toward Charlie and his wife like she was going to hit them. Charlie's wife took another step back, and she probably forgot that there were steps behind her, and she kind of tripped down to the first step, and she almost fell down all of the porch stairs. She stayed behind Charlie like she was trying to hide. "Don't tell me you're sorry. That's too little too late, wouldn't you say? Don't tell me you didn't know. Everyone knew Charles was a fucking freaker. All you had to do was look at him. Why didn't you stop him? Why the hell didn't you stop him?" Mommy was screaming now, and it really was like she was hitting Charlie, just not with fists, but with words. "Believe me, Melissa, if there was a way to go back and undo what happened, I would gladly give my life." Charlie put his hands up again toward Mommy, but she moved away from him like she was grossed out. "Don't you Melissa me. she said, and she wasn't screaming anymore. She looked at Charlie in a very mean, death-stary way. Get away from my house and my family, or what's left of it. Then she grabbed my hand and pulled me inside the house. I didn't want to go with her, but she was holding my hand tight and was pulling it hard, so I had to. She shoved her way through the people in the hallway, and when I turned around to look at Charlie, there were too many people in the way, and I couldn't see him anymore. But I remembered the way Charlie looked at Mommy when she said those mean words to him. His eyes looked very big in his old-looking face, with all the bones sticking out. It was the saddest face I've ever seen in my whole life. I thought about how Daddy was wrong when he said Charlie didn't get hurt, because he did. His son died, too, so his feelings were hurting about that, like ours because Andy died. Except it was worse for Charlie because his son killed his angels, and that was worse than just dead.
24. Poking a snake with a stick. The towel under me was wet when I woke up today. Last night, Mimi put the towel on the mattress, because when it was bedtime, my sheets were still in the bathtub, wet from pee. Mommy forgot to wash them. I took the wet towel off the mattress and the wet PJs off of me, got dressed, walked through Andy's room to check the top bunk, and then I went downstairs to find Mommy. She was in the kitchen talking to Mimi. "It says it right here, Mom. He had Asperger's," Mommy said, and showed Mimi something on the iPad. "I mean, officially diagnosed when he was in middle school. Apparently he had all sorts of issues in school, and dropped out in 10th grade. No friends, no job. Just been hanging out in the basement ever since, basically. For 2 years." "Well, I don't think Asperger's makes people violent, though, does it?" Mimi said. "I guess that explains why we've seen so little of Charlie and Mary these last few years." Mimi looked up and saw me in the doorway. She put her hand on Mommy's arm, but Mommy didn't pay attention. "Some neighbors thought he had other problems, too, that didn't seem Asperger's related. And they even asked Charlie and Mary about it. Listen to this. A couple times I saw him acting odd around the neighborhood, walking up and down the street and gesturing, talking to himself. And he scared the hell out of old Louisa across the street last year, when he yelled at her not to put up her Christmas decorations." That's a quote from their next-door neighbor. I knew there was something wrong with him. I knew it when I saw him at Charlie's party. I always thought he was such a cute kid when I babysat him. But now that I think about it, he was a bit strange even when he was little. But at the party, he was downright creepy. He was standing there staring at the kids and... Melissa, honey... Mimi interrupted Mommy and nodded her head at me. Mommy saw me standing there and said, "He'll hear about this anyway." "Mommy, I'm sorry, but I got the towel wet and the mattress," I said. I went over to Mommy and sat on her lap and she hugged me, but only with one arm because the other arm was holding the iPad. "Mommy?" "Oh, sweetie, don't you worry," Mimi said. "Come on, let's go and get it all cleaned up for you." She took my hand and I got off Mommy's lap. Mommy was looking back down at the iPad. She had lines on her forehead and made clicking sounds with her teeth. "Do you know something that you should never, ever do? Poke a snake with a stick. The snake guy who came to McKinley the day before the gunman came told us that. When you go for a walk or a hike and you see a snake, well, you wouldn't really see a snake where we live, because there aren't any here, or at least not any dangerous ones. But maybe when you go on vacation or somewhere else where they have dangerous snakes, and even if it looks tiny or like it's sleeping, don't poke it with a stick or touch it with your shoe. It's a bad idea." He even showed us why with one of the snakes he brought. Not the emerald tree boa, but another one with red and black and yellow stripes. I forgot her name, but the snake guy said that some snakes with stripes are poisonous and some aren't. He taught us a poem so you can remember which are the dangerous ones. "Red and black, friend of Jack. Red and yellow kills a fellow." The one the snake guy brought out had red next to yellow, so that means she was dangerous. At first she just lay there and didn't move, so it looked like she was sleeping. The snake guy got out a long stick, and he poked her with it. She jumped up at the stick right away, and then she didn't let go and was hanging from the stick with her teeth. It scared everyone, and some kids screamed.
which was kind of dumb, because we were sitting far away from the front where the snake was, so it wasn't even dangerous.
This snake fact popped into my head yesterday when I was sitting on a bar stool in the kitchen and I was eating a sandwich.